This is Alan Nathan of Radio America sitting in for Greg Corumbus and reporting for WorldNet Daily. Support for the president's health care reform has dropped to 48%, while opposition has risen from 29 to 44%, according to the latest Washington Post ABC poll. Consequently, he plans to engage in a full two-week campaign to convince the public that reluctant centrist Democrats should come on board with his plan. Joining us to better understand all of this is Tony Blankley, who's a syndicated columnist, best-selling author, and vice president of Edelman. Good to have you on board, Tony.
Good to be here.
Now, Tony, shooting down the Democratic health care plans, CBO Director Elmendorf recently wrote that the federal budget is unsustainable because the debt promises to outpace our economic growth. Defenders of the bill counter by saying that the CBO fails to factor in projected efficiency and consumer savings that would act as counterweights. However, the CBO has argued that promised windfalls cannot have parity with guaranteed costs. How can Obama extricate himself from this, well, cul-de-sac and find another road?
Well, I'm not willing to write off President Obama yet because he's still at somewhere between 55 and 62 or 3% approval. So more Americans are not still approve of him. They disapprove of increasing numbers of his policies, but they're willing to listen to his argument, which is the advantage of having a pretty good poll number. However, the central thesis for his health care proposal, which he's argued since the campaign and to this moment, has been that America cannot sustain the increased health care costs that are coming along. Therefore, we have to deal with that this year, and that his proposal will increase coverage to almost all Americans and will reduce costs. Now the Congressional Budget Office has said that no, his program won't, in fact, even as he proposes it, cover most Americans, and even those it does will cost more, not less. So he's not only not going to reduce costs, he's going to increase costs, which is the central rebutting of his own proposition. So he's intellectually, he has to either retool or has to be persuasive beyond reason.
And the other paradox, of course, is that 18 million of the 47 million that are supposed to be covered would actually be left out once this plan goes into action.
Yes, and of course, a fair percentage of those who will be included are illegal immigrants who probably aren't voters, by the way.
As well as younger voters who have just unilaterally chosen not to yet engage in health coverage
because it seems to me that the president has two choices.
Yes.
He can decide to try to retool the bill pretty significantly, which does not seem to be the path he's taking, or he can hope that his popularity and persuasion will be able to move some people in the public who already disagree with his policy to turn around and now agree with it, though 2 months ago, overwhelmingly a majority did agree with it. So he's lost people. He's got to win them back without reason as his partner. It's a big challenge.
Is it fair to say that sometimes poll results are behind the learning curve of what people would eventually think once made aware of additional facts?
Well, now you've got into a terribly important point. Polling is a snapshot in time. Those of us who have been in politics know that the point of being a good politician or a good leader, if you take the more complimentary term, is to be able to move public opinion, not to be stuck with it. So it can either be an indicator of where the public is going or not, depending on how the politicians perform and how the public thinks about that.
On Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace, I think it was White House Budget Director Peter Orszag, he said that the only reason why the numbers don't work that well is because of the Medicare reimbursements to doctors. Can Orszag really argue that, but for these numbers, the numbers work fine?
Well, I mean, he can argue whatever he wants, but the history, of course, of general efficiency savings in government, going back at least to the Reagan administration, which I served in, is that they don't appear because it just seems very hard, even if there's theoretically money wasted, in order to target that the money wasted, it's very hard to find it. The other piece, of course, is that to talk about reductions in Medicare costs to providers as mere, of course, means that for anyone who's on Medicare, they're going to have less and less number of doctors participating because the doctors won't be compensated enough to make it worth their time. So the proposal that Obama has of $300 billion saved in Medicare costs means that it's all coming out of the pay to doctors and other health providers to take care of old Americans. I don't think older Americans are going to like that when they understand that.
No, perhaps not. Also, the other component to the Democrats' defense is that we should embrace it because the AMA is behind it. But again, the AMA is only now behind it because the Democrats reversed their original opposition to those Medicare reimbursement payments. Once the Democratic leadership acquiesced to the AMA, the cost results became one of the CBO's top bones of contention. Will these maneuvered, self-fulfilling prophecies really pass muster in the arena of non-adolescent political debate, or what?
Well, we'll see. I mean, the interesting game is that most components of the health industry, hospitals, insurance, very specialized providers, general providers like the AMA, are all trying to cut deals with the administration so that their business plan can survive and what might pass. If the president can put together a package where most of these aspects of health business in the private sector think they can live, he may be able to win because they'll communicate with all their millions of people who are concerned about it. On the other hand, the history of the last time this was tried in 1993, 1994, is that ultimately you cannot cut this package of health care so many different ways, still provide more and save money. So probably, eventually, most of the elements of the provider service, doctors, hospitals, insurance companies, will end up opposing the plan. And some of them will cut back and forth as they think they're getting deals and then getting cut out of deals.
What kind of compromises do you see the Obama administration genuinely having to make in order to pull this off? As you might recall, during the campaign, John McCain sent out an ad indicating that perhaps we should start taxing the health insurance benefits of some folks because their packages are just so wondrously beneficial. And, of course, the Obama people immediately shot that down. But now many of their own Democratic brethren are insisting that they perhaps should consider that very thing. What's your sense of this?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this goes to the question of how much Obama has a commitment to any particular concepts and how much he just wants to pass a bill he can call health care reform. If it's the latter case and everything is expendable and anything is doable to get something passed, he could do it through what's called reconciliation, so he only needs 51 votes, but it's not permanent. Then it's limited to a number of years, unlike a regular freestanding bill that would be a permanent law. On the other hand, if he's too cynical in what he's willing to give away, he won't get credit for accomplishing anything. So how he judges the compromise between giving away most of what he wants in order to get something passed and getting something passed that's worth anything politically to him, I don't know how he cuts that one. My guess is he'll lean towards giving away more than most presidents usually do.
If it turns out, however, that he may very well have to consider taxing certain health benefits, is he going to be able to get away with that as long as he insulates his union member supporters from that same challenge?
Well, I mean, the Democratic theory about tax increases has always been try to promise tax increases only on a relatively small percentage of the electorate, and if possible, promise tax increases and other decreases or payment benefits to a majority. The trouble is that the cost of fixing health care as he defines the problem and as he defines the cure requires more money than all the rich people in America make. So there has to be some legerdemain between the people he says he's going to soak and the people he is going to soak.
So in other words, the United Auto Workers just might find that they too have to pony up like everybody else, regardless of how politically uncomfortable that might be for this president.
Well, there's a double problem for any Democrat because of the long history, is that the public tends to be suspicious of Democrats raising taxes, saying it's only going to hit a few really rich guys, and then it hits up people who don't think they're so rich. So the public is preconditioned to suspect that, just as the public is preconditioned to think the Republican is going to cut taxes just for rich people. Both parties have their default stereotypes with the American public. So he not only has to actually target only rich people, but has to convince people he's only going to target rich people. And he may succeed, but it's going to be pretty tricky.
So affecting more than the demographic originally intended. Seems like we're listening to echoes of alternative minimum tax once again.
Oh, well, yeah, sure. I mean, they're talking about a surtax on people making over a certain amount. They talk about, you know, $280,000 or $350,000 family incomes, which also means you're hitting most of the small businesses. So the real question isn't whether your taxes are going to go up, but whether you work for somebody whose taxes are going to go up. And in that case, of course, it's going to include most people.
Without a doubt. Tony, thanks so much again for being with us today. We genuinely appreciate it.
Thank you.
All the best. Once again, that was Tony Blankley, syndicated columnist, best-selling author, and vice president of Edelman. I'm ever yours, Alan Nathan of Radio America, sitting in for Greg Corumbus and reporting for WorldNet Daily.